It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In the 20-plus years that I've been covering UC Berkeley, I could say that I've never seen so much security here on campus. And now we're finding out that it may not have been necessary.
Milo Yiannopoulos was the only speaker to show up yesterday at UC Berkeley as part of Free Speech Week. His outdoor rally lasted only 15 minutes. The right-wing political commentator, guarded by security, got into an SUV and left. The other speakers had already announced they were not coming, including Lucien Wintrich, who emailed Cal's spokesperson.
I received an email from one of the speakers that Yiannopoulos had listed as slated to come here, and he said, "Don't you know what's really going on?"
In that email, spokesperson Dan Mogiloff wrote, "Wait, whoa, hold on a second. What exactly are you saying? What were you told by Milo Incorporated? Was it a setup from the get-go?" Wintrich responded, "Yes." The event is expected to cost the university $800,000. That's because between 8 and 10 law enforcement agencies were brought in. Today, they were dispersed around campus. The only rally going on today was one from an ultra-left group called United Against Right-Wing Violence. Some of its members covered their faces and prevented reporters from right-wing media outlets from attending the event, even though it was on university property, which is public. Then they did the same with some of us from the mainstream media.
We're here to cover your story.
Yeah, no, I understand that you have a job to do. Our priority is people's protection.
That same group then briefly took over Wheeler Hall.
What we're not going to change is our commitment to the ability and right of our students to bring speakers of their choice to campus.
And Cal has also made it very clear that it is committed to protecting students regardless of the price tag. I'm live at UC Berkeley, Leanne Melendez, ABC 7 News.
All right, well, that's just one example of what's bubbling at college campuses. And I guess you could say it's not more than just bubbling. It is bubbling over and turning into violence. Berkeley, of course, was the scene of so much violence last January when Milo Yiannopoulos, who was just mentioned, was going to come in and speak. He's a flamboyant, gay, conservative, by whatever term you want to define that, who was going to speak at UC Berkeley, which is sort of the campus that's supposed to be known for free speech. And Antifa came and violent riots broke out, and you saw it on the news. But that is that's an example of the violent response to this. But there's something that's taking place that, although it's not violent, it might have even more dangerous implications. You might recall that author Charles Murray, very mild-mannered gentleman, was scheduled to speak at Middlebury College on March the 2nd of this year. These things happen so quickly. It's amazing to me that this just happened a few months ago. March the 2nd, 2017, Charles Murray stands at Middlebury College. He's getting ready to speak, and this is what happens.
What is most important must be spoken, made verbal and shared, even at the risk of
it sounded at Middlebury College, and the professor who introduced him actually had to be escorted out. She's not necessarily, in fact, I don't think she's a conservative at all. She spoke out about it. She and Charles Murray were chased in a car. You can see where this is going. And these are your children and my children, the children of our country, who are somehow reaching the conclusion that you do not have the right to speak if you do not agree with their positions. I've asked Sterling Beard to join me today because he's the editor-in-chief of Campus Reform. Campus Reform is an outreach of Leadership Institute, which was founded by Morton Blackwell in Washington, D.C. Campus Reform follows what's happening all across the country. And I have to tell you, it's like a flood. It's very difficult to keep track of all of this, but we must. So I've asked Sterling to join us this morning to just bring us up to date on what's going on. Are things getting better or worse? Sterling, thanks for joining me this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's start with that question. I don't think there's probably anyone listening who does not know that free speech is an issue on college campuses. From your perspective, are things getting worse or are they getting better?
Well, you know, I'd say that in some regards, things are at least getting slightly better, if only because America seems to be more and more aware of how endangered free speech is on college campuses. Because you referenced, of course, Charles Murray at Middlebury, where Professor Allison Stanger, who, as you pointed out, is not a conservative. She was actually injured, had her neck injured when somebody grabbed her hair and pulled it. And so you can end up with a situation like that. You've got lots of schools that have so-called free speech zones, which they use to sort of regulate the manner and timing of a lot of student speech. So at the very least, I think America is becoming more and more aware of that. And, you know, you can't fight something that you don't know exists. So at the very least, now people are becoming aware of it. Now they can turn and fight it.
I know that we often, those of us that have been covering this, and certainly you, this is your bread and butter. You cover this constantly, Sterling, but people still want to know because they've been having normal lives. How is it happening that college campuses are becoming really much like what, dare I say, the old Soviet Union used to be like, where people could not say what they believed for fear of punishment? How did it get to this?
I think it's actually been that way for some time. The problem is that you have universities which tend to be almost monolithically left-wing in terms of faculty composition. And for a lot of these folks, they're not merely, you know, liberals or simple Democrats. They tend to be progressives on a lot of regards, and they consider themselves radicalized. And for them, the value of free speech in and of itself is subservient to other values, whether that be social justice or, you know, righting the wrongs of the past, which is why you can have situations like we had an article just a few weeks ago from one of our campus correspondents, a fellow by the name of Adam Saves. He found an op-ed off of, I believe it was, Counterpunch, in which Professor Nancy Shepherd Hughes at the University of Berkeley complained that the law actually fetishizes free speech.
Fetishizes. That's why I got to think about that for a second. You know, and of course, we probably have to say this because we have a nation that is not fully educated on purpose, that the reason we have First Amendment speech rights is because our founding fathers came from countries where they could not criticize their government. They could not criticize the king, or they would be killed or beheaded or put in prison. And so that's why they made sure that political speech, especially not vulgar, vile garbage that we now think is protected, but that political speech was protected by the First Amendment. And that was the whole impetus for this. So that's why it's so against our very nature, Sterling, that our kids should now be taught that they cannot entertain any kind of dissent, political dissent on any issue. You know, there was a situation, I think, let me just explain this. This is old turf, so forgive me. I repeat myself, but I have to, because this really actually was my generation. I'm embarrassed to say. You know, I'm really hard on the millennials.
I'm a millennial. Don't worry. I understand generational embarrassment.
Well, you know what? I criticize millennials so often, but I'm beginning to understand I need to apologize more frequently. So I'll apologize to you, Sterling, because my generation has done a bang-up job undermining this country. And the radicals that were my contemporaries in the 60s, they failed. Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers openly said that they wanted to radically destroy the United States of America. They wanted to overthrow the government. They were very clear about that with the Weather Underground. So when they failed, because there were enough committed loyal Americans at the time that they could not prevail, although they caused plenty of havoc in the process, including violence, they shaved their beards sometimes, they cut their hair, they bathed, and they went into colleges and universities. And so Bernadine Dorn, of course, is a law professor at Northwestern University in Chicago, and Bill Ayers, of course, was with the University of Chicago Circle Campus for a number of years and ended up writing textbooks for education, which even colleges like Wheaton College in Illinois use Bill Ayers' material to educate their teachers. I'm just picking two personalities because they're so well-known from the 60s, but it happened all over the place. And these are the people that have been turned loose to educate our children. While we were living normal lives, they were radicalizing through the National Education Association and into colleges and universities. And so, Sterling, I just read that Bill Ayers is very involved in the Antifa movement. I didn't know that. I don't know if you did.
Well, I've not heard that myself. I wouldn't be surprised if that is indeed the case. I mean, you know, it's going to going from way back in the day, being part of the Weather Underground and setting bombs and everything else, to being a tenured professor and supporting a group and sort of amorphous group that practices violence against those with which it disagrees doesn't seem to be too big of a step to me. If anything, it's perhaps a step down in terms of intensity, but that wouldn't surprise me one bit if that is the case.
And again, the goal was to radically overthrow the government. They made no bones about that. I've got a tape of Bernadine Dorn actually saying that. So when we look at what's happening on college campuses, it is reflecting, at least it's reflecting what their goals were. So in regard to free speech, what are some other examples, Sterling, of what we're seeing on college campuses restricting free speech?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the common methods that conservative and libertarian groups use to protest, restrictive speech policies at their universities includes what's called a free speech ball. You know, they get a big old giant beach ball, they inflate it, and they invite students to come up and write pretty much anything they want on the beach ball. Well, we had a rather amusing incident recently out of Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, where there is a Young Americans for Liberty group, and a Turning Point USA group and a Leadership Institute employee who created one of these free speech balls. Well, the campus cops came to confront them. And at one point, they actually said that students were complaining that people were scared of the beach ball. Students were calling it in because they were scared. And the actual quote from the officer, yeah, people are reporting that they're scared of the beach ball and what's going on here. Now, that tells you how far we've come at this point where American students are scared of the very idea of free speech. And you see this sort of multi-pronged attack on the idea. Well, oh, that's not free speech. That's hate speech. And hate speech isn't constitutionally protected, which, you know, that just goes to show their own ignorance on the matter, because hate speech, regardless of how distasteful it is absolutely constitutionally protected. Even going around and doing something as silly and fun as inflating a beach ball and having people write things on it is constitutionally protected. But they'll say that. They'll say, my right to scream over you is my free speech, and if my free speech drowns out your free speech, well, too bad. You know, the heckler's veto kind of idea. You get, I would say a lot of people are, when they realize they can't win the debate on the fairgrounds of, well, here, you know, free speech, let's all agree on what free speech is, they turn around and they try to redefine what free speech means. That's why you see, you know, oh, the hate speech stuff, or, you know, oh, well, because you were saying things that are so torturous to me personally that it's actually affecting me physically, then your speech is violence and I can use physical violence to stop your, you know, metaphorical violence with your words. That's the sort of ideology that you have going on right now on college campuses.
Sterling Beard is my guest. He's the editor-in-chief of Campus Reform, which I can't say enough about. Campus Reform, by the way, you can find all kinds of information, videos. This is an issue that you can keep up with. We're not through talking because the Attorney General has offered a kind of a solution to this. We want to talk about that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Why are you here? You're not
students of hate. This is hate. These are f***ing assholes. This is a joke. You're protecting the Nazis. It's a f***ing joke. You are a joke. You're grown boys. You're grown boys. And even the black ones. You're f***ing grown boys too. You're not protecting the NYU students here. And I'm disgusted. I'm a professor. How dare you? How dare you? These are kids who are trying to learn about humanity. They're trying to learn about human rights and against racism and xenophobia and LGBTQ rights. And you're letting these neo-Nazis near here. You should kick their You should. You should be ashamed of yourself. That's That's It's not up to these students to kick the ass of a neo-Nazi. They don't have to raise their fist. They were taught to be peaceful. You. You.
It's coming from a professor.
I'm a professor.
She's a professor. Hey, guys, she's a professor.
You're here to protect the neo-Nazis. So, you. Those kids should not have to take fists off to neo-Nazis, and you're putting them in that situation. Don't you NYPD.
Okay, well, that was Professor Rebecca Goyette. She's a professor in New York. I'm not sure what university, to be honest with you. Who is she yelling at? She's yelling at the police. Screaming at the police would probably be more accurate. And all those bleeps were obscenities, profanities that came out of her mouth. Now, that's who's teaching your kids. So when you proudly think about that they got into Harvard, Yale, Georgetown, whatever, this is really not funny. You must consider who the professors are and what you're sending your kids into. And if you're willing to have the prestige of them going to those Ivy League schools, along with the risk that they will be brainwashed and ruined and turned against you for life, because that's what's happening in many cases. My guest is Sterling Beard, editor-in-chief of Campus Reform. Actually, Sterling, you are a millennial. Have you seen many cases of students going off to universities and literally turning against their families?
You know, we, of course, don't get too many parents who are turning their kids in for liberal bias and abuse, but I wouldn't be too terribly surprised. I'm reminded of a placemat that Harvard University actually passed out several years ago around Christmas time, which was created by their Office for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion in collaboration with their freshman's dean's office, and it was called A Holiday Placemat for Social Justice, a placemat guide for holiday discussions on race and justice with loved ones. It included such categories as student activism, Islamophobia and refugees, and black murders in the streets. So, yeah, I would not be surprised to say that you have you might occasionally have a student or two turning against their families. That wouldn't surprise me.
You know, Sterling, actually, so I'll speak to this because I can't tell you how many people confide in me that their children have turned against them, that there is I'm not talking about a few. I'm talking about many grieving over the breakdown in relationship over political issues and that the kids just hate them, won't listen to them, won't have anything, you know, they barely can talk to them. And this is actually, I would say it's pretty much a crisis among conservative parents. And most of the time it's that they've been to universities and colleges and their whole minds have been transformed. There is an incident that I want us to talk about that happened in California. You brought this to my attention. I would love for you to kind of explain the circumstances here. We're going to let people actually hear what happened. Sterling, you set it up if you would.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Yes, we actually had a video come to us from the University of California, Riverside. And in that video, which came from a Facebook video posted by one student there, it showed an enraged female student having grabbed his Make America Great Again hat and marching to the student life department. This student's name is Matthew Vital. And this female Latina student marched in there and demanded that they prevent him from wearing his MAGA hat. And she sort of, well, I guess you could say, starts to have a breakdown as the staff there quite rightly does not promise to punish Vital for his political speech.
All right, and she, I don't know if you said this, I missed it. If you did, she stole his hat. And so the interaction between them is all is in part about that. So let's listen. Here it is.
So this guy thought it would be a good idea to go into a conference
with my freedom of speech. With my freedom of speech, she took my hat. This belongs to me. I bought it, and she took it from me. It is mine.
You know what this represents? This represents genocide.
I understand.
Genocide of a bunch of people. And look at what he's wearing in front of a group of people.
Let's calm down.
Make America great again. It was never great. Never.
Because you stole my property. That is literally a crime.
Your ancestors stole this land.
That is a crime. That is literally a crime.
Not letting people wear this on campus.
How about we talk about supporting freedom of speech? Something that people fought and died for.
When people could have tried to protest and use their freedom of speech, what happened?
People let them. Are you kidding me?
No, that's not true.
I was at the protest in Berkeley, and I was silence.
Y'all be making these memes and posting about how we just like want to make a riot and we just want to be loud and obnoxious when we're really trying to fight genocide from happening.
Give me my property. That is all I want here. I myself am half Nicaraguan.
Boy, you're white.
Are you assuming that? Are you assuming my race?
Because,
I mean, come on. Let's be consistent here. Let's be consistent here.
You pass as a white man. How about we actually think about what's going on in
the
this country?
The country that you apparently love so much.
I really don't. I hate this country.
That's why I say leave.
I hate it, and I'm not.
That's
even.
Why I say leave.
I'm staying here because there's shit that needs to be fixed here, so that's why I'm staying.
Okay, then
all
you
right?
don't. But you don't fix it by
because
breaking the laws.
Because we need to get rid of all y'all.
But we don't fix it by breaking right? the laws. And newsflash, I was born here too. I'm not leaving.
Because your freedom of speech is literally killing a lot of people out there. That's what it is. Because you're out there wearing hats like these.
Mm-hmm.
That promote laws and mm-hmm. legislations that literally kill and murder mm-hmm. in the masses,
really?
People of color.
All righty then. Sterling, I was just jotting down some of the things she was saying. Now, this is a student, again, at Riverside, University of California, Riverside, and a Latino student, and I guess a half-Latino student based on the comments there. She says, in part of her rant, she says, she steals his hat. He's trying to get it back. They go into this student, whatever, the center.
Student life office, I think it was, yeah.
Okay, so she says, you stole this land. You stole this land. Okay, I'm throwing some curves at you if you're not prepared to speak about that. But where do you think that's coming from?
Well, it's, I can't peer inside the thief's mind, unfortunately, but... Yeah, that could be any number of things. That could be the idea that the land that UC Riverside resides on originally belonged to Native Americans, indigenous people, and as the United States expanded westward, it stole it. It could be that the student was complaining that California used to be part of Mexico and was ceded, as part of the Mexican-American War. There could be any number of sort of rationales for that, none of which really stand up to good scrutiny, because saying that going on and saying, you stole this land or something to that effect, unless the student in question, Mr. Matthew Vital, is some sort of time-traveling, ageless vampire, I highly doubt he was around for either of those events. And given that he's half Nicaraguan, apparently, as he says, that doesn't even really particularly make sense.
So only half of him is guilty anyway. But you have to figure out which half and which half to punish. But the thing of it is, this is the mantra of La Raza, and some of these radical illegal immigration groups who want to, she said, we need to get rid of all of you all. That's what she said. She's speaking
of
him.
She said that she's also complaining that his hat is causing genocide. And saying, I would say that Make America Great Again versus we need to get rid of all y'all is, one of those is a little more like genocidal than the other.
Exactly. And of course, this is what La Raza teaches. They want to take back the land. And that's part of what's happening on college campuses, too, Sterling, is this whole poisonous thread of racist Latinos. And then she says, your freedom of speech is killing and murdering masses of people of color. A word about that.
Well,
what could
I'd
she
like
possibly
to know,
referring to?
Well, I don't think there is anything that could be possibly, rationally referred to as a mass killing of people of color in the United States going on right now or having occurred in recent history. But, you know, you're exactly right. I think that the student was so wound up, she was looking for anything to say that would try to get her a leg up in the argument. She's turning around and saying, you know, your expletive freedom of speech is genocide, homeboy, I'd like to quote her, but I can't because this is a family program and it's full of so much profanity, and I feel silly saying, just bleeping myself, every other word is profane. But that's the sort of mindset. You'll notice that there's not much thought there. There's just a lot of kind of knee-jerk reactionism, a lot of emotions going on there. She can't really put together a rational argument. What it boils down to is she dislikes the Make America Great Again hat. She dislikes the idea maybe of what that stands for. And so she turns around and she uses alleged, you know, genocides or what have you to try to shut down Mr. Vitale's free speech. And she even goes so far as to walk into that student life department and demand that he be punished for holding a political view that was the, you know, campaign motto of one of two major political party candidates last year. So, I mean, this poor girl has, I think, really no idea how the world really works.
Well, I would say sometimes, Sterling, when we're in moments of emotion like that, what comes out of us is actually what we do think, whether however untethered from reality it might be. And you see the themes in what she's saying, again, comporting with groups like La Raza, what she's saying is what she's been filled with. And this is what's happening. This is the other thing that's happening on college campuses. They are becoming places of racial tension, just like the... But because the leftists got so much power on college campuses, I think everything's magnified. You know, I was just reading one of the things that you guys put out, Campus Reform, by the way, where is it they're separating for meals, separating Muslims from... I got to remember what you said. I can't remember where the college campus is, and I know you have so many stories in your head you might not remember right off the top of your head, but they're separating students for meals by their ethnicity. Muslims, and I think, here it is, segregated dinners for black Muslim students. This is, I'm sorry, I apologize to you, this is out of Breitbart. That's why you didn't remember.
I don't recall us running a story of that... on that particular subject.
Well, now
I
you mean, have we, a new we, one.
We've of course run subjects on, you know, segregated housing for people of different ethnicities, on the, you know, justification that they need a safe space to protect them from non-colored people, white people. But I was unfamiliar with that particular story.
It's Kellogg and Brown offering segregated dinners for black and Muslim students. So anyway, so this is the thing. They are separating people. They are making... You know, Sterling, I was in at one of the museums in Washington probably a couple of years ago. Just we'd taken family there, and I was sitting on a bench waiting because I was tired, and they were all inside looking at something. It was like the outside general area where people are milling about. And the thing that struck me was there were a lot of junior high kids there on school trips, and I saw not one, not two, I saw so many small groups of kids hanging out together who were every race and ethnicity you can imagine mixed up together. They were not segregated in colors and types. They were hanging out together, laughing, joking, having the best time. And it just really struck me. And then I thought, you know, now when kids get to college, now they learn the divisions that used to separate us as Americans, and they're becoming divided. So, all right, so there's that. And then let's talk about the violence. I talked about Berkeley. We played that clip. Everyone probably remembers. It was just a few. Berkeley erupted in all kinds of violence. The influence and the violence. Do you see violence on other campuses besides Berkeley?
Yeah, you know, you brought up Middlebury earlier. It's not unusual for us to see, you know, small physical confrontations. Thankfully, it usually doesn't become anything massive. You may recall a student at San Francisco State University, a white student, for example, who was physically accosted by a black female student because he wore his hair in dreadlocks, and he was told that he couldn't have his hairstyle that way because it was cultural appropriation. So that's the sort of thing that we occasionally see. It's usually, like I said, minor physical confrontations. Sometimes it just gets weird. We recently had a story come out of Berkeley wherein a couple of Antifa were stalking members of the College Republicans out there, including one of our campus correspondents, a fellow by the name of Troy Wharton. They were tweeting out their location. You know, Berkeley College Republicans meeting right now inside Eureka after drinking with College Ham and Joe Gibson's yada, yada, yada. And they actually listed the individual College Republicans by name. And that's also alarming because, you know, if someone were to throw a rock at them or, you know, try to hit them with a car or something, that's entirely possible. Thankfully, it very, very, very rarely gets to that point. But the fact that it even can get to that point is alarming.
Yes, and I think Antifa's, you know, their favorite thing is to intimidate and to cause violence, and I think it's only going to get worse, Sterling. Sterling Beard is my guest. He's the editor-in-chief of Campus Reform, campusreform.org, a great resource for what's happening on college campuses. We'll be back to discuss some good things that are happening, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sir, I'm sorry, these are people too. Back off.
There's no law.
You're not, you know what? Back off about personal space. Back off. Leave me alone.
You're pushing me.
Hi, media. Can I talk to you?
No, you need to get out. Well, you need to get out.
No, I don't.
You need to get out.
I actually don't.
All right. Hey, who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here.
That was Professor Melissa Click of Missouri, University of Missouri. That's been some time. That was 2015. You might recall that they were, that was a photographer who was trying to, a journalist photographer who was trying to take pictures of this protest where they were trying to, it was about free speech, and she's trying to shut him up and trying to get him out and trying to get some muscle to stop him. I believe that Melissa was finally fired. Also, I might note that the University of Missouri, we've mentioned this recently, their enrollment is way down, and so is their funding. They're suffering from the reputation that they're getting once a bastion of the finest journalism school, really, in the country. That's their reputation. And so they've been taking a hit for what they have allowed on their campus in regard to stopping free speech. Sterling Beard is my guest, editor-in-chief of Campus Reform. CampusReform.org is a great resource, and they actually put out a list almost every day now of what's happening in college campuses around the country. One problem that many of us are having, but it's you guys are feeling the brunt of this too, is being labeled as a hate group or a hate entity. Hannah works for Campus Reform, and she has been put on the hate, the LGBTQ hate list by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Let's talk about that, Sterling. What does Hannah do for Campus Reform?
Well, Hannah is our program coordinator. She actually works to recruit and coordinate with a large number of student writers from around the country for our campus correspondent program. That's where we have those students who, you know, are on sort of on the lookout for liberal bias and abuse, not only at their own campus, but at other campuses in their region. And it's been a very successful program for us thus far. Some of our biggest stories have actually come from our campus correspondents. And those are just ordinary college students who think it's, you know, worth it to fight the good fight and get involved in journalism to expose a lot of what's really going on out there. And we're very proud of that program. And Panda has been doing a fantastic job running it for us.
So what was her crime? Why is she such a big, quote unquote, hater?
Well, not too long ago, Hannah actually went on the radio with the Family Research Council, and believe it or not, they didn't even discuss any LGBTQ issues. She was actually on there to discuss socialism, but the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, put her on that list because she did that radio interview with the FRC.
Yes, and I have to say that radio show is on our network. So, yeah, so that's our sister program. See, Tony Perkins hosts it in the drive time, and I do the morning show. Just because FRC is supposedly the hate group, by the way, so is AFA, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, Hannah finds herself on this list because she, not because they talked about anything related to LGBT, but just because she was on the radio show. So now, Sterling, I have a feeling you may have an honor soon. You just never know what's going to happen. But the point is, this is actually not funny. They're trying to marginalize, and that's not even enough a strong enough word. They're trying to destroy the speech of people like you and like me, who are just trying to talk about the truth, about what's going on in the world, share our opinions. We have a right to do that because we are Americans and we have First Amendment rights. But the Southern Poverty Law Center and other groups like some George Soros-funded groups are doing everything they can to shut us up and destroy us. And so they've labeled Hannah now. And it's serious. She's right. It's a serious thing because it's fine that she's working for campus reform, but that's on her record. If anybody looks up her name, or my name for that matter, or many of our names now, and we're looking for employment, and you're listed on a hate list, that can have terrible effects. I'm assuming Hannah's a young woman. She has her whole future ahead of her. So just your final thoughts on that issue.
Sure. Well, you know, it is unfortunate because you're right. It will now come up any time that somebody tries to do a background check or, you know, looks, just Googles around for Hannah's name. And you're right. Hannah is a very young professional. She just graduated from college earlier this year. We're thrilled to have her on board. She is taken to this job like a duck takes to water. And she's done a fantastic job with it. And we're thrilled for that. But you're right. At a certain point, the SPLC, which used to, you know, be kind of a very hallowed organization, if they continue to throw everybody on a so-called hate list just for disagreeing with them or for holding views that they dislike, eventually, if everybody's guilty of hate, nobody is. And the SPLC will have reduced itself to irrelevancy by becoming more of a partisan sort of hackish organization than any organization dedicated to fighting actual hate.
Before we turn to General Sessions, is really throwing his hat in this ring in a big way to try to stop this. And I want to talk about that in a second. But before we do, I just want to throw out a few more examples. I'm looking at your latest, at least the latest I've received, Harvard students demonstrating against Betsy DeVos, calling her a white supremacist. As she's getting this across, she's getting this everywhere she goes. What's driving that, you think?
Well, I think what's driving that is the fact that they don't really know, a lot of the left doesn't really know how to attack Betsy DeVos. You know, they can say, oh, well, she's rich and this is going to make, you know, any opening up charter schools and whatnot is going to make her rich somehow. Of course, they never explicitly really say how. They could never point to any actual holding she has that would enrich her by opening charter schools. So keep in mind, white supremacists at this point, is just sort of a statement that gets tossed out there. It's like calling somebody a racist at this point. So, you know, Betsy DeVos is a white supremacist. Well, how? Well, they'll never be able to really tell you how. The idea that she wants to cut funding for public schools, maybe, and that's somehow supposed to be racist per se, but that's the problem. That term now, white supremacist, gets thrown around so much it has become absolutely meaningless, just like the term Nazi has. You could have an actual Nazi running, and most people would simply roll their eyes if you were to call them a Nazi because the term has become so overused it's lost all meaning.
I would say they look a lot like members of Antifa, but anyway, let's talk about something that's been in the news in the last few weeks, sadly, and that is the NFL protests as the players kneeling during the anthem. And so law professors and others on campus have responded to this in what way, Sterling?
Well, you've begun to see some people hold a take-a-knee protest at various different campuses. We've seen two recently, one at Cornell University, which was, in the words of one law professor at that university, kind of hijacked. It went from, you know, taking a knee to protest racism and, you know, police brutality to, you know, having people chant Free Palestine and other sorts of things, and it just kind of became a mishmash of various different causes. And we had pictures of what appear to be at least several hundred students, faculty, and staff taking a knee at the quad there at Cornell. We also saw a smaller protest at Kent State University in Ohio where people were taking a knee. That one actually had a counter-protest later from a Turning Point USA chapter where people stood up for America, if you will. And now, at a certain point, I'm beginning to think this is going to sound all like a jazzercise class. People are standing up. They're taking a knee. And as soon, you know, planking will get revived and people will lie down. I mean, it's getting kind of silly at this point.
It is silly, and it's so convoluted, even that the NFL players are so confused themselves. And I've said, and I will repeat, Sterling, I think a lot of it's because they're so poorly educated. They have no idea what they're talking about. And some of them genuinely think they're doing something good, and they just don't, they don't even understand what the flag means, what it stands for. They don't understand why they're actually standing, they're sitting with a symbol of something that is supposed to be what they're for, which is freedom and equality among people of all races and kinds and all of our, from whatever birth a family we come from. So that's what they're fighting, but they don't even know that. Well, at last, the Justice Department is getting involved in this. And Attorney General Sessions was at Georgetown University last Tuesday. Sterling, I'll let you sort of, what did he say? What is he saying he's going to do?
Well, he said that freedom of speech in America is under attack, and it's high time the Justice Department actually get involved and hold schools accountable when they fail to support the First Amendment. And this is good news to hear because so many schools across the country have restricted student freedom of speech. As I pointed out earlier, they have so-called free speech zones, or they attempt to punish students for their free speech or for their other rights. So it's actually good to see that the Justice Department is getting involved here, because unless and until there is some outside impetus, universities are not going to be able to self-police. They're not going to be able to hold themselves accountable. Why? It's just not in their model. They're not really set up to sort of self-police when it comes to this sort of thing, because there are no free speech radicals on campus, not in the way that there would be, say, you know, race radicals or class radicals or other sorts of radicals. And so as a result, you don't have any outward pressure. Maybe now we'll begin, if the Justice Department begins suing different universities for their lack of free speech protections, maybe we'll begin to see universities actually sort of respect the First Amendment.
I want to read a little bit of his speech on Tuesday at Georgetown. He says, starting today, the Department of Justice will do its part in this struggle. We will enforce federal law, defend free speech, and protect students' free expression from whatever end of the political spectrum it may come. He said, we will be filing more cases in the weeks and months ahead. They're going to be filing a free speech case siding with students who said their rights were limited. It has to do with Georgia Gwinnett College, who developed a policy limiting student expressive activity to two small free speech zones, very tiny. That's not really new, though, is it, Sterling? I mean, these free speech zones have been around for a long time, like across campus, behind buildings, you know. You can say what you want to over there. That's not new, is it?
No, that's not new. Those have been around for years. And the problem is, of course, a university will implement those. And unless and until a student is brave enough or has, you know, good political training enough to turn around and challenge those so-called free speech areas, they rarely go challenged. That's even though you have organizations such as Alliance Defending Freedom or the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education that are out there that are willing to pro bono work to get these so-called free speech zones repealed. They are out there. There's lots of them. And until they get challenged, they're not going to go away.
Sessions went on to say, a national recommitment to free speech on campus and to ensuring First Amendment rights is long overdue. And he said the president, I'll come back to that in a second. The American university was once the center of academic freedom, a place of robust debate, a forum for the competition of ideas, but it is transforming into an echo chamber of political correctness and homogeneous thought, a shelter for fragile egos. Man, I thought his speech was absolutely stunning. He is so completely eloquent, a Southern gentleman, and just to know that the Justice Department is turning its attention to this has to be a relief to you, Sterling.
Well, it absolutely is, because, you know, one of the mission of campus reform is to expose leftist bias and abuse on campus. And perhaps the happiest day will be the day when campus reform is no longer needed. And, you know, you would never get to that day without people such as Attorney General Jeff Sessions looking into this, saying, okay, you know what, we're actually going to sort of reassert the primacy of the legislature and of the law over our universities, and actually make sure that universities are following the law. That's one of the things that I think that happens to, also needs to happen at the state level. State legislators, I understand, are kind of afraid to exercise their oversight authority over so many state institutions, so many state schools, because if they say, this is a useless subject, we're going to cut this, or we're not going to, you've increased tuition X percent points per year for the last 30 years, we're not going to increase your funding. Well, then it gets called an education cut. They get described as anti-intellectual. At a certain point, I think they have now kind of found the wedge with which to actually strike back a little bit and reassert their primacy, which is the First Amendment, universities behaving badly. And hopefully we will end up with a better university system coming out of all of this mess. But that remains to be seen.
Well, I have to say campus reform has certainly done their part because you have helped inform. You know, I know Fox does tons of stories with you guys, and I need to do more. As I said to you off the mic, there's just a flood of information right now. It's very hard to keep up with everything, but you guys are doing a great job of covering this. Sterling, we're almost done here. If you were to, there are some heroes in the conservative movement on college campuses now. Would you not agree? We only have a minute left. There's some kids really standing up for what's right, aren't there?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the folks in our correspondent program are enduring some backlash on their own campuses, some hatred on a personal level, just to do some simple journalism, to get the truth out there. Of course, you've got folks around the country who are placed under sanctions because they're trying to exercise their free speech rights or expose leftist bias and abuse. And we do have some heroes out there, yes.
Yes, we do. And we need more of them. And so if you're listening, and I bet campus reform could use some eyes on the ground in various campuses. Maybe some of them are not covered. And so that's another thing you could do in linking up with campus reform. Perhaps you have some younger person that you think would be a trustworthy eye on the college campus in which they attend. Sterling Beard, campusreform.org. Sandy Rios in the morning.